Here's the big headline. All of this AI stuff requires a ton of people. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss. So all these large language models, we are not yet at the point where machines are training machines. We're not there yet. You still need human annotation, which means that if you are training your database on whatever, you still need people to go in and tag things, annotate, yes, this is right, no, this is not right, yes, this is a fish, no, this is a boot, or whatever it is. Think of you're a radiologist, right? You're gonna sit for 8 hours in a room and click, yes, this is cancer, no, this is not cancer. To some degree, I don't think we can get rid of the humans yet.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Handelsblatt Disrupt, dem Podcast über neue Ideen, Disruption und die Zukunft der digitalen Welt. Mein Name ist Sebastian Mattes und ich begrüße Sie wie immer ganz herzlich aus unserem Podcast-Studio hier in Düsseldorf.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome everybody.
My name is Andrea, I'm the CEO of Handelsblatt Media Group and I'm very happy to see you all here.
I'm Sebastian, I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Handelsblatt.
Als Handelsblatt haben wir dieses Jahr zum ersten Mal in Davos eine eigene Veranstaltung organisiert, und zwar im sogenannten AI-Haus. In diesem KI-Haus ging es um alles, was zum Thema künstliche Intelligenz gerade wichtig war, um Regulierung, um Innovation und natürlich den verantwortungsvollen Nutzen der künstlichen Intelligenz. Und wie Sie gerade gehört haben, es war ganz schön voll an dem Abend, und das lag nicht zuletzt an unserem Gast. Es ist Amy Webb, die Tech-Expertin ist unter anderem für ihre Vorträge an der South by Southwest in Austin, Texas bekannt, wo ich sie übrigens vor 6 Jahren zum ersten Mal getroffen habe. Sie ist die Gründerin des Future Today Instituts in New York, das ist eine Consulting-Firma, die sich darauf spezialisiert hat, Unternehmen und Regierungen zu den Auswirkungen von Zukunftstechnologien zu beraten. Außerdem ist sie eine gefragte Rednerin und TED-Talkerin, sie ist Professorin an der New York University und Bestseller-Autorin. Eine ihrer meistgefragten Veröffentlichungen ist jedoch ihr jährlicher Ausblick auf die wichtigsten Technologietrends des nächsten Jahres. Und auch darüber werden wir heute sprechen.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
KI wird Ihr Business verändern. Wie können Sie davon profitieren? Tyler Wessing ist eine internationale Wirtschaftskanzlei. Weltweit arbeiten wir mit Technologieführern und Innovationstreibern zusammen. Wir beraten Sie bei Fragen zu strategischen Akquisitionen oder der Entwicklung konkreter Anwendungsszenarien, genauso wie zum Schutz des geistigen Eigentums oder zum KI-Recht. Investieren Sie in KI. Entwickeln Sie sich weiter mit KI. Mit uns. Wir wissen wie. Tyler Wessing.
Give a very warm welcome to Amy Webb. Welcome. So to all of you who have not heard of Amy Webb, I'm sure it's not many people here in the room. So I've met you the first time 2018 at South.
Really? I feel like I've known you much longer than that. Was it 2018?
It was 2018, and it was at the South Byway where Amy is presenting.
Wait a minute, I'm going to kill myself trying to sit on this thing. I'm going to stand in solidarity with all of you. Well, we're going to do it like this. Is that you should sit there.
And when I first saw you, you came on stage at the South By in front of 7,000 people with a broken leg.
No. That's a lot. That's misinformation. Very on trend. I had 2 broken feet. I broke both of my ankles. Yeah. So this is totally not about AI, but should I tell the story quick? I was on a stage. I was a little too excited and I fell off. And then, just like Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, I got back on in heels and kept going. And then I found out that I was in a lot of pain. And then I stupidly got on a plane and flew. All of this is bad. Anyway, I broke both of my ankles. So that year at South By, if you saw me, this leg was in a full cast. And this leg was in a brace, and I had everything hidden behind big boots.
And you know why I didn't know that? Because I didn't even make it into the room where you were speaking in front of 7,000 people. So I queued only 45 minutes, so I couldn't be inside. I had to go to another room and watch you on a video screen.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, and what I learned is when you want to see Amy Webb at the South By, you have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and queue.
And stand on the fire escape. I know, we're trying to fix it and figure out a different way.
But
we're here.
And you didn't have to queue like since 6 o'clock in the morning. That's great.
I hope not. That would be cold outside.
So a few more remarks about Amy. What I really find interesting, she studied the clarinet when she was young. Not many people know that. She worked as a data journalist, went as a correspondent to Asia, so knows quite a bit about China as well, can speak Japanese. Went back to the United States, founded the Future Today Institute, which is, she's obviously the CEO of this institute, and she's publishing this Tech Trends report every year, and you can download this for free on the internet. I can highly recommend that. It's very interesting. I think it's the best Tech Trends report in the world, and because it has so many examples you will never have heard of. And this is what we are going to talk about today.
Okay.
The most important trends you are seeing. But I would like to start with something you wrote on the internet. And everybody here in the room might have noticed that in Davos, everybody is very pessimistic. And you wrote on LinkedIn that you are very worried about the future and mentioned that this moment demands a new mindset. Let's start with that. What kind of mindset is that? How does that look like? How does that work?
Sure. Can I start at a different... I will answer that question. But I just wanted to thank you first for hosting. When you and Andrea mentioned this, I said yes, because even if I wasn't speaking here, I would have asked for an invitation. If you haven't been to the Handelsblatt, I'm not being paid to say this. Their events are amazing. I was at... Is Pulse public? It must be.
It is.
Pulse Network is amazing. I was in this unbelievably powerful, incredible day-long summit, part of which was in German, but I powered through. I learned so much. I met so many incredible people. Anyhow, so you guys produce amazing events, and I also wanted to say, I want to say thank you, because this is great. And
thank you so much.
Mirantix people are the ones who started this thing. No, so I just want to say thanks. All right. You asked me a question, about
mindset.
Needing a different mindset.
How does it look like? How can leaders apply this kind of mindset? How can we change? How does it work?
So I think the answer is strategic foresight, but let me give this in a different context. I feel like when I talk to executives about AI, they seem to already have the answers. And the answers are either we're going to make a ton of money, or we're going to have boosted productivity. And very few CEOs tell me, I don't know, but I want to think it through, right? And this sort of, I think it's okay to say, like, I generally understand the technology, but I really want to think through what's next versus automatically deciding growth or risk. So the mindset that I think we need right now is sort of broad, but also intentional. So I don't exactly know what's coming, but I'm willing to use data and build some models to try to figure out what's next. And I think it's okay to say that those are predictions. The predictions don't have, it's not like on this exact day, at this exact time, we will make $20 trillion. It's more like, given what we know to be true today, I feel very comfortable saying this predictive scenario looks real. The details might change, but now we can make some decisions.
And this is pretty much what you're doing with big corporates, with governments all over the world. So maybe walk us through, how does strategic foresight work? Maybe you have an example with a recent company where you did something surprising, that we can understand how strategic foresight works.
I don't know that I can give any company examples, but I can give you sort of a broad overview. Most people don't know this, but a long time in the 80s, 90s, strategy and foresight used to be the same thing. It was just called strategy. And foresight was doing flavors of this, but it was long-range planning. And then what is the strategy and how do you execute? And somewhere along the way, just like the ridiculous U.S. healthcare system, everything became hyper-specialized. And so You had hyper-specialized people in strategy and hyper-specialized people in foresight. And really, these two disciplines are better when they're together, right? So the problem is now that they're apart, a lot of the foresight work are scenarios that lack rigor. So executives can't use them to make decisions. Strategy is very near term. It's like the next couple of quarters or the next year, maybe 2 years. And unfortunately, a lot of chief strategy officers have kind of become like the CEO whisperer. That they're performing 1,000 different jobs, and they have all of this responsibility, but they're not necessarily accountable. So it's really hard, I think, to be a chief strategy officer. The best way forward is to bring these two things back together. So that's kind of what we do, which is the modeling and the trends and the scenarios and then the strategy.
So let's look into what you see right now, into the data, into the analysis you're doing. What is the most important trend you can see now, maybe something nobody else is seeing right now?
Well, I have a bunch. We talked about a bunch. You want to start with wearables, or am I jumping the gun on this? Should I start with concrete?
Is there the big overall trend, something?
The big overarching South By thing we talked about?
Yes.
Okay. I will don't post this on social media, everybody. So I've been trying to figure out what's happening because there are pretty big shifts. I literally just said, don't post this on social media. This guy takes his phone out and it's like, I'll trust you're not doing that. So I've noticed that there's a huge push in capital right now into a handful of fields. There's a huge push in talent. There's this sort of big emphasis right now, and also we're starting to see as a result a lot of growth. In economics, when we talk about commodities, there's such a thing as a super cycle, where you wind up with all of this investment, and all of that investment creates this flywheel for new products and services. I think what's happening are these sort of converging super cycles in artificial intelligence, and I'm going to call it the IoT, except I think we need a new name for that. There's a lot of stuff happening with wearables that will feed into AI, and AI will feed into that, and then also biology. So I think this sort of these sort of super cycles that are happening are going to start really setting us on a different course for the future. The problem in Davos, if I may say, I think everybody's very fixated on the AI piece and not so much on these other pieces.
Because AI is changing so many other fields around.
I think because AI is like the new hotness, and that's just what everybody's talking about right now. I know we're in the AI house, so I think that's wonderful. A lot of companies are kind of late to the party on AI, right? This is not new, and generative AI is new, and that's certainly that's part of the super cycle. But it's also not. This is long horizon technology, so we got a long way to go.
Let's talk a little bit about the super cycle. What does that mean for the economy? How does that change the industry? Because I would say now, okay, we have this big hype around AI. AI will change other fields. So what's the big deal? Why do we need like an expression like super cycles?
Do we need an expression? I don't know. I keep just making stuff up. So that's, we'll see if it sticks. Look, I know everybody's super excited about GPT. I'm much more interested in a different GPT. That's GPT also stands for generative pre-trained model in the AI world. But outside in economics, it stands for general purpose technology. A general purpose technology has the ability to radically transform society and the economy in ways that are really hard to predict in the present. A good example of a GPT would have been electricity or the internet. A couple years ago, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I called up some of my friends who were economists and I was like, hey, let's have fun together. This is my idea of fun, whatever. I was like, hey, do you guys want to get together and try and figure out the total valuation of the internet? Just like hang out and have some beer? And they were like, no, we don't want to do that. But because they said it's impossible. There's no way to make that calculation unless you do it in reverse. So you would have to shut the internet off and figure out what we've lost. So these are examples of GPTs. I would argue, to answer your question at last, that this super cycle represents those possibly three, probably two of those new GPTs. So a general AI is definitely a general purpose technology. I think biotechnology is as well. And I don't think it's wearables, but I think there's something about connecting devices to people, pets, and objects that whatever that is, and I don't have a name for it yet, I think that's another GPT.
So let's dig deeper into that. So maybe let's start with the wearables. In your annual letter, you wrote that the time of one device will be over. We will have multiple devices. Will we go back in the era where we have a camera and a phone and all this stuff? Is that a good...
I know, that's inconceivable, right? When I started college, I had a Toshiba Laptop Pro that weighed 15 pounds, 8 kilograms. That thing could be a self-defense weapon. It was so heavy. I had that. I had a wireless canary sniffers. I don't know if I should say this out loud. Did you ever do... You didn't. Probably none of you did. I used to do some war driving. That's where you get in your car and you try to find other people. Good. Testify. You had to, like, drive around and find open networks. Anyhow, so I had one of those, but that was small. I had a digital camera. Yeah, I've lost you. Let's bring it back. Bring it back. I had a mini disc player. So I had all these things. And if you were to go in a time machine and tell people in the mid-90s, someday you're going to have all of this in one Star Trek device, everybody, including the device manufacturers, would have said, that is impossible, right? But all signs point toward a future where this convergence into one device becomes a divergence again into many different devices. We built a model in 2018 showing that that year was the beginning of the end of smartphones.
I know. That was when I didn't come into the talk.
Sorry. But the model is still holding true.
But we still have smartphones.
We still have them, but the penetration is different. So people are not rushing to buy the new phones like they used to. So this does not include the global south. This is mature, established larger economies only. But people are still spending money. They're spending it on peripherals. So we see a lot of people with watches, with pretty soon buttons. So there, have you guys seen the new Humane AI pin that's coming out? I know a lot of people are like, actually, there's a hilarious show called Big Mouth in the United States. It's a cartoon that made fun of a brooch, and then they made it. Anyhow, this pin seems silly. If you're not familiar, it's a pin that has a projector and a speaker. So it uses skin put, so you can hold, it'll project onto your hand. You know, it also listens in real time. There's some OpenAI stuff that's a part of it. Why does all of this matter? Because LLMs use text, and they may seem very powerful, but they're actually not that powerful. In order for us to really use AI at a significant level, the AI needs to understand real-world context in real time. We don't have that yet. So if everybody is suddenly wearing devices that have AI at the edge, that are recording data and have new types of sensors, that is a complete game changer for what the future of AI looks like.
So let's,
I'll keep my answer shorter. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Let's fast forward.
In 2030, how will our device landscape look like then?
Right. So 2030, so how many years is that from now? It's 6 years.
It's not very long.
Here's why I was trying to calculate that, because the first thing I was thinking about was regulation in Europe. Wow, you guys are... I wasn't even making a joke that time. Right, so everybody wearing Google Glass, that's obvious, is one thing. If I had a little pin on that was black, you're not going to even see that it's there, but it's potentially recording all this stuff. So I don't know what that looks like in Europe, and I think that there are so many different types of devices that are coming that will start to do things like that. That's the reason. So, like, I betcha in the United States, and then in the United States, we'll have to see if this commercially takes off and if consumers see the value in it. I think they didn't see the value in Google Glass because did you ever have Google Glass?
For a couple of days and didn't work at all?
Yeah, so... do you remember what we used to call Google Glass, people who wore them all the time, they had a special nickname. Do you know what they, at least in the US?
Yes. Glass holes.
Glass holes, that's right. Part of the reason why they got that name was because the battery life on those things was only 30 minutes. So if you're wearing this thing all day long, come on. Sorry if that was you, but I'm also not sorry. So, but I think, but the utility wasn't clear. And they were hard to use. This is an invisible device with an invisible interface that could be recording this whole conversation. And by the time that we're done, I have a message with a summary of all of the key points that changes education, that changes board meetings, that changes dating. Oh my God, can you imagine being on a date? Can you imagine?
I can't.
You can't, but like, imagine being, I just thought of this. Imagine being on a date and having this device and like, it's like you're the world's greatest listener ever. I mean, that's manipulative, but also maybe a great idea because who can pay attention for that long?
You can get a little bit of feedback. Yeah. Yep. So how does that change the use of media and what do you think about that?
You mean like entertainment media?
Entertainment, journalism, you have new gatekeeper questions.
Oh, well, look, I mean... I am concerned about journalists. Yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried that everybody worked so hard on search. It's pretty clear that the value proposition of search looks totally different going forward. And if we are now talking instead of typing and we're having conversations, what, is some chatbot going to stop every sentence and say, according to Handelsblatt, you know, or whatever it is? So I'm worried about what that looks like going forward. Yeah, I am concerned about that. On the other hand, this represents an opportunity for conversational news. Could you imagine if we're here in Davos and I'm listening in on I was in a session earlier today. I didn't know what anybody was. It was deep economic stuff. But here's a good example. Did anybody ever see the app MindMeld? So this thing existed for like 5 seconds. It was one of the most amazing apps I've ever seen to this day. It was made by a guy named Tim Tuttle, who was at the MIT Media Lab. This thing was an iPad app. So imagine standing there, listening to everything that we're talking about, and in real time, it would pull... We start Davos. It's not just a map, but contextually, it knows that we're talking about the forum, annual meeting, because those two terms are synonymous. And it starts auto-populating with all this information that will help me get through this better, faster, stronger. So imagine if I always had Handelsblatt in my ear. Let's say I'm wearing this pin. I've got Handelsblatt in my ear. And I'm sitting in... You guys should totally do this because I'm just thinking about this right now. But I'm sitting in a session. I don't know what's happening. I'm confused. Imagine if I just did this to have whatever it was projected on my hand, that'd be invaluable. That'd be amazing.
So we will definitely consider that. So let's get back to the big trends. And we have to talk about one thing that has been on many panels in Davos already, and that's the what happened to the workforce. There was the big study from PwC. Many CEOs think that workforce reduction and reducing headcounts will already happen this year because of AI. Is that starting now? And other studies say 60% of the jobs or parts of the jobs you can do with AI already. So let's think about the next 3 years. What will happen?
I would love to get with every one of the people that answered that survey and ask them, do you think this is inevitable or do you think it's your ambition? So look, everybody's concerned about their bottom line. And if companies can achieve growth by addressing the bottom line, meaning attrition, right? Cutting staff, cutting workforce. I'm sure they're pretty excited about that. So I don't
know. Because first of all, you have to invest. You need maybe more people to implement technology, right?
Here's the big headline. All of this AI stuff requires a ton of people. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss. So all these large language models, we are not yet at the point where machines are training machines. We're not there yet. You still need human annotation. which means that if you are training your database on whatever, you still need people to go in and tag things, annotate, yes, this is right, no, this is not right, yes, this is a fish, no, this is a boot, or whatever it is. And for the longest time, that was being done in emerging economies. The problem is people have expectations that these systems will be more advanced. So now you need master's students, you need PhDs to go in and do this annotation. It's really hard to get those people. Think of you're a radiologist, right? You're going to sit for 8 hours in a room and click, yes, this is cancer, no, this is not cancer. So I think there, to some degree, I don't think we can get rid of the humans yet. The other,
but we will eventually?
I think, here's what I think is happening. I think that for the past 18 months, executives have been worried about a recession. I think we're heading into an election year. There are 70 elections, at least, happening.
Worldwide.
Worldwide this year. Lula in Brazil just made this crazy announcement about a return to social capitalism. Just things are all changing, and I think that has leaders really concerned. And if they're concerned about costs, where are the first cuts? Always. It's people. So AI is a nice solution that I think there's going to be a lot of layoffs. There's big expectations about AI and how that's going to fix everything. And I think we're going to get 18 to 24 months from now and realize, shit, we actually need the people. We need either people to do things that this AI can't, or now we need other people to do things along with the AI that we didn't do before.
Let's do a little bit strategic foresight and look into Europe. From what you see right now, what role will Europe play in the next couple of years in this big conflict between China and the United States, the conflict between these tech superpowers? What role will Europe play, or will it play a role at all?
You're putting me on the spot. I think it depends on Germany. I mean, I hate to say that. Germany is, look, I know there's a lot of different Europeans in the room, so I don't want to pick any favorites, but I think Germany needs to find a vision for the future and to have some leaders who are clear on what that vision is. and to make people feel less in the Mittelstand, less depressed, and to empower and inspire them. And I think if that happens, then we have a much more powerful Europe. I believe at the moment, mainly because of the engineering and the tech, the industries that are very important right now, I really think Germany needs to be the engine for that. And then I think Europe has the
opportunity. I introduce you to some people in Berlin.
Maybe. Good, good.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll have a meeting. But because
they need such a conversation like this.
Well, the reason I'm saying, look, Trump just won. I don't even understand what the hell happened last night. I went to sleep. I was in sessions. My husband, we get out of this meeting and he's like, you're never going to believe what just happened. Everybody was wrong. So Trump's, it's the largest landslide victory that has ever happened. And the big takeaway headline from that is not Trump won. It's that everybody got it wrong.
And again.
Again. Right. So we have this massive volatility in the United States. We may be a home for innovation and tech, but all of this is tied to the economy and to politics. Yeah. We cannot manage this as a country. China has a very different viewpoint on data and privacy and other things like that. So I don't think China should lead. And unfortunately, like, that leaves you guys. And
so let's talk about, imagine there would be a vision. How could that look
like? Well, I meant unfortunately because, like, that's a lot to carry. But
It is. Like, so let's talk about how that could look like. So you mentioned there should be a vision, there should be a strategy. How could that look like? Because, I mean, the big players in AI come from mainly US, a few from China. There's not so much happening, a little bit. And Jonas is here. But compared to what OpenAI got in terms of money, it's rather yet still small. It gets big, but... So how could a strategy look like?
I think we need to find a new balance between totally revenue-driven innovation and development and overly regulated innovation and development. It's going to be very hard for the United States to come up with a new way to regulate tech. I mean, every structure is incentivized against
that. Can we
that.
Talk about regulation a little bit later?
Sure.
I would love to, because I really would like to know, when we look into the industry, manufacturing and all this, it's
right.
so strong in Europe. How could a vision for Europe look like?
Okay, so you've got pharma, you've got cars, you've got shipping, you have engineering, all of the...
Chemistry,
right. So all of these areas are tied into that super cycle that I mentioned, and all of those general purpose technologies. It would be good to do this long-term vision for what does not just Germany look like, but in what ways does Europe set the standard for the rest of the world in a way that's palatable to everybody else? So one of the things I think Europe... Sorry, I won't talk about regulation. I'll wait.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran. Sie leben Fairness, Kultur und Werte? Zeigen Sie Ihr Engagement als Arbeitgeber und werden Sie Teil der Fair Company Initiative. Mit der Fair Company Initiative zeichnet das Handelsblatt Unternehmen aus, die insbesondere Berufseinsteigern und Young Professionals ein faires, attraktives Arbeitsumfeld bieten. Zu den entscheidenden Werten gehören unter anderem das Engagement für Mitarbeitende, Diversity und Chancengleichheit, Nachhaltigkeit und gesellschaftliche Verantwortung. Erfahren Sie jetzt mehr unter faircompany.de.
So yeah, I've read something interesting in your recent report. It's about new materials could this be something for Europe, like that we produce new materials because it's very close to the manufacturing, to the industry.
Yes, that's where you were going with this. I wasn't picking it up. So yes, so one of the interesting convergences in tech is between AI and biology. So these two things are coming together. And what's really interesting is that it's leading to the development of new types of materials that have never existed before. DeepMind
is... Can you give us some examples?
So off the top of my head...
Transparent wood I've seen as an example.
Yeah, so there's that different polymers and enzymes and different ways to build things up and break things down, different types of adhesives, different types of lens technology that can change. I wear bifocals, and so what that means is I can see you very clearly right now, but if I got closer to you, I'd have to do this.
Right.
Wouldn't it be nice if that just was able to change, depending on where my eye was focusing? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that happening, and what's cool is that DeepMind is at the sort of forefront of this. So they've created an AI system that doesn't just...
It is in Europe, but it's not a European company anymore,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, but it's not just new drug discovery, which I think we hear about all the time. It's also new materials discovery, which means if you're an auto manufacturer, that you've got new options for windows, to make cars safer. If you're a pharmaceutical company, that means different form factors for drugs and wearable devices. I mean, it changes everything, but it gets very little attention.
Interesting. So this could be a field. I have two more questions and then we will open up. I guess you have a lot of questions. Let's talk about something completely new for me. It's called OI, Organoid Intelligence. What's that? Why should we pay attention?
All right, so let me see if I can explain this succinctly.
It's also from the reports of the Future Today Institute.
Thank you. So as of, I think, last August, this came out of Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. There was a new paper. So there's been some work for many years on taking human brain cells and trying to create a new type of computer architecture out of them. So it's fusing human brain cells with some form of AI and actual hardware. You might have heard of something called DishBrain. It feels like a techie. Look it up later. Somebody took some human brain cells and put them in a petri dish along with some electrodes And then it learned how to play Pong on its own without human intervention. It did it in a really weird, different, interesting way. So there's been a lot of research since then in cultivating what are called organoids. So these are tiny, they're not real, it doesn't look like a miniature brain, it's just a blob of tissue. But it's a blob of tissue made out of human brain cells that has started to, the latest experiment on this, it listened to 240 Japanese people speaking in, and after some amount of time, it was able to recognize who was who. So I know this sounds like creepy and terrifying, and why in the hell would we do this? The answer is classical computing architecture is starting to hit its limits. So in order for us to do all of this cool advancement with AI, we probably need a different type of architecture.
And who's working on that right now? So who
so
are
that's
the major players?
Uh-huh. So on the academic side, Hopkins, there's some universities in Australia. This is a little bit of a gray area because the question is, what if this device becomes sentient? What are the ethics of having a tiny blob of brain cells that maybe has...
The EU will fix that.
What's that?
The EU will fix that.
Yes, yes. No, but I mean, it does call into question, like, what is self-awareness? You know, some really thorny questions and problems. But on the tech side, who's working on this? I mean, it's going to shock you, but it's all the same big tech companies. So, like, they're not building human brains. But Facebook and Meta are working on brain, the similar types of technology. Google is, you know, it's the same players.
And will this be the next big race in computing?
Oh, my God, I hope not. That would be a horrifying.
But what would that mean? Why is that horrifying?
Horrifying because taking human tissue and putting it into a petri dish is with consent is one thing. There are lots of places in the world where maybe consent wouldn't be given, and I that concerns me. I'm really not so worried about an AI arms race. I am really, really worried about a cyber bio arms race, which again is combining AI with biology. You know, and that really scares me.
So before I open up for questions, my last question would be, it's also coming back to discussions we hear all over the panels in Davos. Sam Altman has talked about it today. And he gives the impression AGI is closer than everybody thinks. Maybe it's already there. Is it already there?
It very much is. So again...
So let's talk. What is AGI?
So artificial AGI...
Because everybody's talking about it, nobody's really saying what it is.
Yeah. So artificial general intelligence is when a system or a series of systems can do multiple tasks at or complex tasks at or better than the level of a human. If you are looking for standard definitions, I think the Stanford has an AI institute, and they're trying to sort of standardize the definitions that everybody's using. There's artificial narrow intelligence. All of us use this all the time. That's when an AI can do something, one narrow thing at or better than our ability. It's in your car, it's in your phone, it's in this microphone and whatever it's being connected to. DeepMind has repeatedly shown that its drug discovery program is able to simulate and come up with novel protein structures we've never been able to see or do before. It's trained, a lot of the training throughout history for AI has always been on games. So it was training on how to play checkers and then chess and then Go. Now there are multimodal systems where, again, DeepMind has worked on certain video games that are more about intuition and strategy. And I would say if you look at the definition and some of what we're seeing just in academic papers right now, I don't know that they would say that we've achieved AGI, but it's starting to look like again, tiny bits and pieces to me. And I think that's important for business and society and government, because if you wait for a walking, talking robot that takes your jobs and murders you in your sleep, which I think is what people think AGI is, you will have missed what's actually happening. And I don't
so
think...
So what is what actually happens?
Well, what is it
while
actually?
While you answer that, we try to find the microphone that we can just circulate that.
Sure.
Hannah has it. So raise your hand and she will come and you say quickly who you are, your question. But first of all, you answer the question, please.
Okay. So what does AGI look like? I mean, honestly, I don't know. I don't think it's just a chatbot. I think it's more things are being decided. I think
does it not need more information than just text? I mean, this is basically what OpenAI has, right?
It's right. So text. So GPT-4 also, so that's the text-based. There's. Have you used GPT-4V? Sounds like a sexually transmitted disease. Have you? I mean, I'm not asking if you've had a... Have you played with GPT? We're gone, right? It's the visual. It's the visual engine.
Yeah.
So, right. So I think what's on the way is so MIT CSAIL. This is the computer science lab. I think it was like 10 years ago. They trained an AI system to watch all of this video and predict what the humans were going to do next. And it worked unless it was humor. So then it watched a bunch of episodes of The Office, and they could never figure out what Michael, the main character, was going to do next, which is part of what made the show funny. So I think, anyhow, but that's where we're headed. But we just need way more different types of data.
So Sam Altman is wrong with his... It's
yes,
very close.
Everybody... No, please. Look, I'm not... I think...
You can say yes, you...
I think there's a huge incentive to gain as much market share as possible because the future of AI and generative AI is also the future of the cloud. So there is a huge incentive for hyperscalers to partner up and push this right now. And I think when people start talking about ever more powerful systems, I think it's in part a way to galvanize and attract some of that attention.
I think we could go on for hours and hours. Unfortunately, our time is almost up. So I would like to ask you, because we have been quite pessimistic in some fields, and what is the main reason you are optimistic anyway?
I know, people think that I must just be like a horrible, like I just must have nightmares all the time. And I'm actually a pretty optimistic person. And the reason is because I don't know what the future is. I mean, I guess I build models for a living, but I have no idea what the future is going to look like. Not exactly. I can tell you things that are happening, but ultimately those things are not going to happen on their own. The future is a result of the decisions that we make in the present. And what gives me hope is that there's a lot of smart people like you who are making those decisions, which means we have agency. We can choose to create a better future than the terrifying futures that we're all hearing about all the time. And I have faith that you're all going to put us on the right path.
Amy Webb, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
Here tonight. Big applause for Amy Webb.
Und damit sind wir auch schon wieder am Ende von Handelsblatt Disrupt. Wie immer freue ich mich über Kommentare in der Handelsblatt Disrupt LinkedIn-Gruppe. Sie können mir natürlich auch eine E-Mail schicken oder mir bei LinkedIn folgen. Die Details dazu finden Sie in den Shownotes. Übrigens, mit dem Aufhänger guter Vorsatz fürs neue Jahr, mehr Wissen, weniger Zahlen, gibt es für Hörerinnen und Hörer dieses Podcasts, das Handelsblatt Print und Digital, mit 30% Rabatt. Schauen Sie doch mal nach unter handelsblatt.com/podcast30. Die Details auch dazu finden Sie in den Shownotes. Danke an dieser Stelle auch für die Unterstützung von Marcel Joschko und Regina Körner und Migo Fecke von professionalpodcast.com, dem Dienstleister für Strategieberatung und Podcastproduktion. Wir hören uns dann, wenn Sie mögen, am nächsten Freitag wieder. Bis dahin wünsche ich Ihnen gute digitale, aber natürlich auch analoge Zeiten. Ihr Sebastian Mattes.
Bist du auf der Suche nach Inspiration und Netzwerkmöglichkeiten? Dann ist das Summer Camp der Handelsblatt Media Group genau das Richtige für dich. Treffe über 800 EntscheiderInnen, nimm an interaktiven Workshops teil und werde Teil der einzigartigen Camp Community. Wir wollen gemeinsam mit dir die Zukunft unserer Wirtschaft gestalten und aktuelle Herausforderungen angehen. Erfahre mehr und sichere dir noch heute dein Ticket auf hmg-summercamp.de.